Final hour of our health report tonight, and we will talk about vitamin D, how it fights cancer. It could be a miracle supplement. Back in a moment with Dr. Michael Halleck on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Fast night. Dr. Michael Halleck, a professor of medicine, physiology, biophysics at the Boston University School of Medicine, who has also revolutionized the understanding of vitamin D and its role in disease prevention. He's received the Linus Pauling Institute Prize for Health Research, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Michael, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
Good, good. You know, I've just been taking, over the last couple months, vitamin D3. Is that okay, and what is it?
Sure. Vitamin D is made in your skin from exposure to sunlight, and it's also found naturally in salmon, for example, as well as in cod liver oil. And it's very important for bone health and for overall health and well-being.
And does it now, when you talk about vitamin Ds, how many are there?
So there are two vitamin Ds. It's called vitamin D3, which is made in your skin. Vitamin D2, which actually comes from stimulated sunlight exposure to yeast. It turns out that we've done studies recently and showed that vitamin D2 is as effective as vitamin D3 in maintaining both children and adults' vitamin D status and works just as well.
Now, you're finding it's also starting to fight cancer?
There are data to show that if you live at a higher latitude, if you're at higher risk of vitamin D deficiency, you have a more than 50% increased risk of developing colon, prostate, and breast cancer, among other cancers. There were studies done out of Harvard where they showed that in the nurses' health study, that nurses that had the most vitamin D intake reduced their risk of breast cancer by 50%. There's data to suggest that in men that had the highest intake of vitamin D, reduced their risk of prostate cancer by 50%, colorectal cancer by 50%, and even leukemia by about 30 to 50%.
The Linus Pauling Prize for Health Research, tell me, what was that? What did you do?
Well, I was absolutely thrilled and honored by that prize because it represents to me, showing that you can take a very simple concept, which is really vitamin D, and to demonstrate to the world that it has so many health benefits that it can improve their overall health and welfare. And the prize basically recognized my 30 years of research in promoting vitamin D for good health and sensible sun exposure as a major source of vitamin D.
So this is pretty darn important stuff, Michael, isn't it?
Well, it turns out that, you know, your listeners may be wondering, how is it possible that vitamin D can decrease risk of autoimmune diseases like type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, reduce risk of cancers, reduce risk of infectious diseases? The reason is that every tissue and cell in your body has a vitamin D receptor, which means that every tissue and cell in your body needs vitamin D. There's good evidence now that up to 1/6 of the human genome, up to almost 2,000 genes in your body, are directly or indirectly controlled by vitamin D.
Have you looked at the vitamin K vitamins as well?
I've not done any research in the vitamin K area, but that's also now becoming a very hot topic, and it may have important implications for bone health.
I see. Now, doctor, when they make synthetic vitamins, okay, and they call them pharmaceutical grade, like vitamins A and B and C and D, how do they make a synthetic vitamin?
Yeah, what happens is that when you're exposed to sunlight, the precursor of cholesterol in your skin is converted to vitamin D. And so what they do is that they actually collect the precursor of cholesterol from lanolin, from sheep's wool. And then they expose it to ultraviolet radiation, which stimulates sunlight, so that you make vitamin D3. So that is considered to be a synthetic form of vitamin D3. But it's identical to what you make in your skin. Or mushrooms or yeast. They're exposed to simulated sunlight, their precursor of vitamin D is converted to vitamin D2. And like I said, that's what's also considered to be a synthetic vitamin. So
are
both vitamin D2 and vitamin D3 are used in food supplementation as well as in multivitamin supplements.
Are we getting it naturally too?
Most humans on this earth have always depended on sun for their vitamin D requirement. And that's probably one of the major reasons why vitamin D deficiency has become epidemic in both children and adults in the United States, because everybody now avoids the sun, either because they're working all the time, playing on their computers, or parents are always very concerned about sending their child outside without a sunscreen. We showed that if you put a sunscreen on with an SPF of 30, you reduce your ability to make vitamin D in your skin by 99%.
What happens if there's no sunlight for a week or two, or there's a lot of rain? Do you still get that ultraviolet
light? Has been very clever because throughout evolution, humans have always depended on sun for their vitamin D requirement. And it turns out that as people migrated north and south of the equator, they lost their skin pigment, most likely so that they can make enough vitamin D. We also know that if you live above Atlanta, Georgia, you can't make any vitamin D in the winter. So to answer your question, we now recognize that vitamin D, being fat soluble, when it's made in your skin or you ingest it in your diet, you store it in your body fat. And at times when it's raining outside or in the wintertime, if you have normal weight, you actually, as you're using that fat, release the vitamin D back into your body so that your body can have an adequate amount of vitamin D. This turns out, however, to be a problem for obese people because vitamin D sticks in the fat. It can't get back out. And so we know that obese people are at very high risk of vitamin D deficiency. And to correct that deficiency, they need 2 to 3 times more vitamin D than a normal weighted individual.
What led you to investigate vitamin D?
Well, you would think that, you know, I was thinking that this was going to be the hottest topic when I first started as a graduate student back in 1969. But it turns out that back then, most people thought vitamin D was probably one of the most boring subjects, right? Found in cod liver oil prevents rickets in children. We don't see rickets anymore, right? We're not thinking about vitamin D deficiency. But that happened to be the opportunity for me in a laboratory, and it's just like taking a sow's ear and making it into a golden purse. Happened to be in the right place at the right time. We began to realize, working with Dr. Hector DeLuca at the University of Wisconsin, that vitamin D, once it's made in your skin, actually has to go to your liver and then to your kidneys to get doubly activated before it can carry out all its biologic actions in the body.
Now, when you investigated vitamin D through the Linus Pauling research, right?
The Linus Pauling Prize was in recognition of my 30 years
of your work, I mean, 30 years of research, Michael, that's incredible. So you obviously one of the foremost experts here. Are there other experts for the other vitamins, for like A and B and C?
By all means, yes, there are. There are excellent scientists that have spent, you know, basically their entire careers on a particular vitamin, and both vitamin A as well as vitamin K, you know, have very important health benefits, and a lot of contributions have been made. And, of course, Linus Pauling had promoted vitamin C.
How much do you have to take of vitamin D before it's effective? How many milligrams, for example?
Yeah, it turns out that it's vitamin D is in units, and a typical multivitamin contains 400 international units. We now recognize that we may be off by a factor of 5 to 10-fold for the total amount of vitamin D that both children and adults need. We showed in a study last winter, healthy adults that were taking a multivitamin, taking a glass of milk a day, we gave them 1,000 units of vitamin D a day. Essentially, not one of them was able to become vitamin D sufficient during the wintertime. So we believe that adults need at least 1,500 to 2,000 units of vitamin D a day to satisfy the requirement. For children over the age of 1, I recommend at least 1,000 units of vitamin D a day, and up to 2,000 units of vitamin D is perfectly safe. the American Academy of Pediatrics has finally come out with a recommendation that all children from the time they're born throughout their entire childhood should be on at least 400 units of vitamin D a day. And I recommend actually at least 2 to 3 times that.
Did you find animals in the wild, they know that their body needs supplements and they go ahead and get it in their sources?
Funny you should ask. It turns out that that through the food chain, at least say in Alaska, a lot of the animals in the ocean exposed to sunlight make lots of vitamin D. That vitamin D is very plentiful, say in polar bear liver, as well as in seal blubber. And that's why Eskimos never became vitamin D deficient, because they take a sliver of polar bear liver, or they would take and eat some seal blubber. It turns out that we did a study recently with a group in Dallas, Dr. Ferguson's group, looking at lizards. And we put them in a glass tank. We put some lizards on a vitamin D sufficient diet and some lizards on a vitamin D deficient diet. And we gave them light sources, a light source that made vitamin D and a light source that didn't. They looked identical. Those lizards that were vitamin D deficient sought out the light that simulated sunlight so that they can make vitamin D in their skin. So they're actually pretty smart about this. Most animals exposed to sunlight make vitamin D, and that's where they get their vitamin D from, with the exception of cats. Cats cannot make any vitamin D in their skin, and so they absolutely have to get it from their diet.
A friend of mine is married to a woman from Japan, and she will not go out in the sun unless she's carrying a little umbrella. And apparently a lot of people from Japan do this. And she wears gloves, but she hates the sunlight. And that's not a good thing then, right?
Well, we've always have depended on sun for our vitamin D requirement. And in fact, skin pigment, like I said, evolved and devolved most likely for the production of vitamin D and for the prevention of damaging effects from excessive exposure to sunlight. That's why most African Americans in the United States today, even if they're getting a little bit of sun exposure, are vitamin D deficient. It turns out that Asians are at very high risk of vitamin D deficiency because you're right. They avoid all sun exposure.
Yeah. And she's from Hiroshima. So they're, they're uptight about the atmosphere as it is, because of the A-bomb that was dropped there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the saving features in Japan is that they eat a lot of fish, and fish does provide you with a natural source of vitamin D.
How much sun is too much sun?
Yeah, I'm always asked that question. You know, they say, "Doc, just tell me, how long should I stay outside?" Well, unfortunately,
I'm baking, Doc. I'm baking.
You know? Right, there you go. It turns out that it depends upon time of day, season of the year, latitude, and your degree of skin pigmentation. Okay, so I'm a white adult. On Cape Cod, if I'm in a bathing suit and I know that I'm going to get a mild sunburn after 30 minutes, I typically recommend to go outside for about 5 to 10 minutes, expose arms and legs 2 to 3 times a week, followed by good sun protection in the spring, summer, and fall. Even though in the summertime the sun is shining at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're not making any vitamin D in your skin, or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it's between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. that are your best times to make vitamin D.
And that's what they also say if you want to get a good suntan, almost between the same time period.
And so it turns out that the sun that causes suntanning is also the same type of sun that makes vitamin D in your skin.
Isn't that interesting that we're tied into the sun this way, and probably in more ways than we even know? How does it work that way, Michael?
Well, we did some studies because I was curious about this, asking the question, when in evolution did vitamin D make its first appearance on Earth? And it turns out that we worked at Woods Hole. It's a very famous oceanic laboratory, and we grew an organism that's existed in the Atlantic Ocean, a phytoplankton, for more than 750 million years unchanged. When we exposed this organism to sunlight, it made vitamin D. We think that vitamin D may be one of the oldest hormones made on this earth.
And obviously necessary.
Well, not only necessary, but it's been suggested by me and others that it's quite possible that one of the reasons for the demise of the dinosaurs is that once that asteroid hit the Earth and it caused that pall of pollution and all the rest, they couldn't make any vitamin D. They would have had muscle weakness, severe bone problems. It would have been very devastating for them, on top of the fact that they had less food and it was cold.
Do you find that people then tend to be a little more healthier in the summer than the winter when they're out more and they get more sunlight than when it's really cold, let's say?
Yeah, people feel better for sure when they're exposed to sunlight. And there's a variety of reasons for that. But also, we've shown that if you're vitamin D deficient, you wind up having these generalized aches in your bones and muscles. Often, people will just kind of write it off as winter blues, or the doctors will say that the patient has fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome. These are classic symptoms for vitamin D deficiency, and it's known as osteomalacia. And so people that complain of throbbing, aching bone pain, muscle aches and pains, muscle weakness, especially in the wintertime, it's likely due to vitamin D deficiency.
Why do people get depressed when they don't see the sun?
Well, the major explanation for seasonal affective disorder is that it's the intensity and duration of sun exposure directly through your eyes that regulates the production of melatonin. So at night, your melatonin levels go up and you want to go to sleep. And as the sun is rising, the intensity of the light coming through your eyes suppresses melatonin levels, so now you want to be awake and active. However, probably about 40 to 60% of both children and adults that live in northern latitudes cannot recognize sunlight intensity in the wintertime. They need much higher intensity light in order to suppress their melatonin levels. So when they get up in the morning, their melatonin levels aren't suppressed. And so as a result, they want to go back to sleep. They want to hibernate. And as a result, they feel miserable throughout the wintertime. And so bright light therapy works very well. But there's also a study showing that some patients that have kind of the winter blues, if they increase their vitamin D intake, they feel a lot better. And it's in part due to this vitamin D deficiency effect on muscle and bone.
So people who generally get depressed, for example, you think vitamin D could help them?
There is some data to suggest that vitamin D deficiency increases risk of developing schizophrenia, Alzheimer's disease, and depression. So there's absolutely no reason not to increase your vitamin D intake, and it could very well help some people with depression.
That's pretty dramatic, isn't it?
I mean, like I said, every tissue and cell in your body has a vitamin D receptor, and that includes brain, prostate, colon, skin, your bones, of course, your intestines, of course, heart. We know, for example, now that if you're vitamin D deficient, you have a 50% increased risk of developing a heart attack. If you're vitamin D deficient and you have a heart attack, you have a 100% increased risk of dying.
Of the years of research, was there anything out there that startled you, shocked you, that you didn't expect?
Well, I think the one of the major breakthroughs, I think, by Dr. Maudlin and Dr. Adams at UCLA is a very interesting observation. And that is, we knew over 100 years ago that people that had tuberculosis, if they were put out in the sunlight, so that's why solariums were developed, that they got better. And we could never understand why, although we always thought that there was a vitamin D connection. And
there
they demonstrated that immune cells need vitamin D to fight infections.
Remarkable. Let's come back and take some phone calls with you, Michael. Final calls, as a matter of fact, on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Richard Sauter joins us as we talk about underground bases and tunnels. What is the government trying to hide? Should be a fascinating program. Let's come back now and take some final phone calls on our Vitamin D show on Coast to Coast AM. Well, with Dr. Michael Halleck, and we're talking about vitamin D and some of your other questions as well. We'll go to the phones in just a moment. Beyond what you're doing, Michael, incredible work. Is science jumping on board? Are they going to make recommendations, for example, to the FDA about what the units of vitamin D should be?
It turns out that because of all the press that's come about, and it's mainly people going to their doctors asking to have their vitamin D level drawn. It's called the 25-hydroxy vitamin D level. And the doc reluctant to do it, but finally doing it, realizing the patient's vitamin D deficient, and now doing it on all their patients. They're now finding that vitamin D deficiency is probably the most common medical problem in the United States in both children and adults. This has finally got the attention of government. And so the Institute of Medicine has just convened a committee, and they're hoping to come out with new recommendations probably in early summer of next year that hopefully will substantially increase the recommended allowance for both children and adults for vitamin D.
Okay, next up, let's go to East of the Rockies caller John in Louisiana. Hey, John, thanks for calling.
How are y'all this evening?
Good.
Okay, I couldn't help but think when he's talking about we graduated in that college in 69. I was thinking I graduated in 69 myself. It was from the University of Quang Tri, though. I got plenty of sun over there.
He sure did.
Took my last chopper ride out of there in August 69 and looked back. Anyway, I was just wondering, as far as the sun goes, how about skin cancer and the pruning effect and all that the sun has on you over, a period of time?
No, it's an excellent question, and the dermatologists, of course, are very concerned about this, and appropriately so. The problem is that abstinence never works, and that the type of recommendation I'm suggesting, like maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes, arms and legs a couple of times a week, will not increase your risk, in my opinion, of skin cancer. It's mainly excessive exposure to sunlight, sunburning experiences that will increase risk of non-melanoma skin cancer, and it principally occurs on the face. So I always recommend always wear sun protection for your face. It's the most sun exposed and the most sun damaged. But exposing your arms and legs a couple of times a week, in my opinion, will not increase your risk of non-melanoma skin cancer.
I remember in my earlier days, Michael, if I went down to South Beach in Miami, I would get a first-time sunburn, and I'd get a fever at night. I must have had just too much sun. That's not good, is it?
Very bad. And in fact, it can increase your risk of developing melanoma, which is, of course, the most deadly form of skin cancer.
Exactly.
And just for your listeners' interest, I have a website, vitamindhealth.org. It's all one word, vitamindhealth.org. And on there is an hour presentation by me that they can watch and lots of information about vitamin D.
All right. Next up, we go trucking in California. Ray, it's your turn. Hey, Raymond, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Mike, I'm so glad for this show tonight. It's just really great. Listen, my wife is an African-American, and she has lichen planus. I wonder, would that help her, vitamin D?
It certainly won't hurt her, and there is evidence that vitamin D plays an important role in skin health. So I would encourage her to be taking at least 2,000 units of vitamin D a day, and she may feel better as well.
Yeah, because she doesn't get out much, and I tell her she should. She's kind of a stay-at-home wife. She's 66, but we're trying to move, so we're trying to get a little ranch up north so I get her. We be out in the sun more, but right now I need something else.
I personally take 2,000 units a day. I cycle and I play tennis outside, and I tell everyone that they should probably be taking between 1,000 and 2,000 units a day on top of their sun exposure. It won't hurt you. And it can definitely increase your health.
So you think it might help that lichen planus, though?
It possibly. It does have an effect on barrier function, and that lichen planus can certainly have, be related to that.
All right. Thank you very much for all your information. Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Where do you go from here, Michael? I mean, do you continue to do research into this? And if you do, what's next?
Well, I'm giving what we've been interested in is that milk is the major food source that's fortified with vitamin D. And there are a lot of people that either don't want to drink milk or they can't tolerate milk. So we showed several years ago that you can actually put in orange juice. And so we're now looking at other ways of fortifying foods with vitamin D, which could have a significant health benefit for both children and adults.
Absolutely.
We also have programs underway right now looking at the role of being exposed to simulated sunlight for men with prostate cancer, asking the question, is there something maybe being made special in your skin above and beyond just vitamin D itself that's having a health benefit? And we hope to have some of those answers within the next couple of years.
Why do we get these supplements, these vitamins from food sources, for example, from the sun? Why isn't the body just simply producing it all by itself?
Well, throughout evolution, of course, our ancestors were hunter-gatherers and foragers. They were always exposed to sunlight. They were probably making, on average, 3,000 to 5,000 units of vitamin D a day. We don't do this anymore. That's the problem. If you think about this from a Mother Nature's perspective, if you needed to guarantee that humans would get that nutrient, what better way than getting it from sun exposure? Because everybody, thousands of years ago, were always outside in the sun all the time. And they had enough skin pigmentation to protect their skin, but they had enough sun exposure to make enough vitamin D. We don't take advantage of the beneficial effect of sunlight anymore, which is the major reason why vitamin D deficiency is a global health problem.
Let's go to Janesville, Wisconsin. Kathy, it's your turn. Morning.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, Kathy.
Good. Okay. I have a question. Okay. I had a hysterectomy, and anyway, because of the full hysterectomy, I had to take calcium with vitamin D. Well, then I had increased pain all over in my body. I had it like in my ribs and in my hip and all that kind of stuff. Well, to make a long story short, it turned out that I had multiple myeloma, which is cancer of the plasma cells of the blood, and that was eating holes in my bones from the inside out. And why was it that that caused me so much pain? Because if I would stop the calcium with the vitamin D, the pain went away. But I'm glad I took it because it helped find the cancer, but I had increased pain when I took the calcium with the vitamin D. Could you explain why that might be?
Unfortunately, I don't have any idea. It's just possible that, you know, when you were starting the calcium and vitamin D, that the disease just became more active. But I'm not sure that it was due to your calcium and vitamin D. I mean, I see patients with multiple myeloma, and we make sure that they get enough calcium and vitamin D because it helps to maintain their bones, because the multiple myeloma definitely can chew up your bones and cause you to fracture.
Michael, if the body had to do away with one vitamin, one that it did not take, what would it be? Which is the least of the vitamins that won't hurt you if you're not taking it?
Well, vitamin K, probably, because you make it yourself. Bacteria in your gut can make it, so it's not essential. And probably vitamin E as well are less critical. But vitamin A, the B vitamins, C, and certainly D are critically important. I'll give you a couple of additional perspectives.
Sure.
We know now that during pregnancy, women that are vitamin D deficient that are much higher risk of having preeclampsia. They have a higher risk of having a C-section when they're giving birth. In fact, a 400% increased risk of having to have a C-section if they're vitamin D deficient. But more importantly, young girls that are vitamin D deficient have a deformed pelvis, and therefore they have a difficult time, if not impossible time, to have childbirthing. That's the reason why in evolution, pigmentation devolved in order for people to be able to make enough vitamin D.
When did we know all this? 10 years ago? 50 years ago? When did we know this? Or just during your research?
Well, some of this was actually known even 50 years ago, but nobody really took it very seriously, because once vitamin D was added to milk, eradicated rickets, nobody ever thought about vitamin D deficiency. Because back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, people were working outside. People were playing outside. And as a result, they were getting more than enough vitamin D. But for the past 40 years, unchallenged, have been the dermatology societies telling you never to be exposed to direct sunlight. Even today, the American Academy of Dermatology still recommends never be exposed to direct sunlight. And in my opinion, that is causing a major epidemic of vitamin D deficiency. We've always depended on the sun for a vitamin D requirement, and we should take advantage of the beneficial effect and prevent the damaging effects from excessive exposure.
There's no question, with some moderate sunlight, people feel better. There's no question about that.
No question about it. And it turns out that we did studies a couple of years ago and showed that when you're exposed to sunlight, your skin makes beta endorphin, which is the substance that's also made in the brain that's responsible for runner's high. So we think that that may be one of the explanations. The second explanation is that you're making vitamin D and definitely improving bone health, muscle health, reduced risk of type 2 diabetes, reduced risk of heart attack, stroke, as well as common cancers.
Let's go to the state of Washington. First-time caller. Tom, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes. You actually already answered one of my questions. It was about the skin cancer. And then I'm a vegan. I became a vegan, stopped eating animal products because of health concerns due to diabetes and stuff you were touching on earlier tonight. But what I'm wondering now is there something – I'm not a big fan of taking supplements. So you said it's fortified in milk, but then I don't drink milk. Orange juice and other things, what – other than having to take supplements, what things would I find vitamin – D N.
Right. So if you want to get vitamin D2, right, which is kind of a plant source, it turns out that UV irradiated mushrooms are actually a very good source. If you go to the USDA website, they show that mushrooms that are exposed to sunlight or simulated sunlight, which is what the growers are now doing,
uh-huh,
are a very good source. So you have to look on the label. There are certain manufacturers now that are irradiating mushrooms. It's a great source of vitamin D2.
Okay. And then you said something about north of Atlanta, we don't get enough sunlight in the winter. But I mean, it's always sunny on eastern Washington where I'm at.
Sure. Now, what I mean by that is not so much that you don't get the sunlight, but the sun is coming in at a more oblique angle through the atmosphere, and it absorbs all the vitamin D-producing rays. So it doesn't matter if the sun is shining. You cannot make any vitamin D in your skin from November through February if you live above Atlanta, Georgia.
Fantastic. Right. Now, do you recommend supplements, Michael?
Yes. In fact, I recommend that all children, adults, be on a supplement. Like I said, children during the first year of life, minimum 400 units. I personally like to put most of my patients on 1,000 units of vitamin D a day.
Regardless of how much sunshine you get.
Exactly, because you can never become vitamin D intoxicated from sun exposure, because the sun makes enough vitamin D in your skin, and if you make too much, it destroys it cleverly. For children and adults, they should be on at least 1,000 international unit supplement. You can go to your local drugstore for $8. You can buy 100 1,000 unit supplements, and there's about a dozen different national brands. They're all quite good. Take it routinely every day. It'll definitely improve your health.
What will you feel?
Well, you may or may not feel anything. If in the wintertime, like I said, if you have aches and pains in your bones and muscles, many of my patients tell me that they have dramatic improvement in their feeling of well-being. But vitamin D plays a critical role in preventing more chronic serious diseases. And with the influenza season upon us, there was one study done in Long Island that showed that women that took 2,000 units of vitamin D a day reduced their risk of upper respiratory tract infections by 90%.
Maybe it's a little like oil to a car. You know, the oil helps things move along, but it's not until you take the oil away does the engine seize up and shut down.
Exactly. I mean, it's a very good analogy, and that's the point. Is that people think, well, now that I have cancer, I'll take more vitamin D and that's going to help me fight it. No. What you really want to do is have vitamin D on board all the time to prevent you from getting cancer, prevent heart disease, prevent diabetes, and even reduce risk of chronic infections.
Yeah, yes. Here we go in the wee small hours of the morning, Halifax, Pennsylvania. It's Wayne on East of the Rockies.
George,
there you go, Wayne.
Mike, is there any beneficial for tanning beds, and if there is, how long do a person
good question
get in a tanning bed a week?
Good question. Tanning beds, any benefits there?
Sure. It turns out we've done a study. We did a study in tanners here in Boston. They went once a week. I recommend if you're going to go to a tanning bed, go for 50% of the time recommended for tanning, because you still will make vitamin D. And it turns out that tanners in Boston had robust, healthy levels of vitamin D. They had higher bone density. I don't advocate tanning. And if you're going to go to a tanning bed for vitamin D, go in for 50% of the time and wear sun protection on your face.
Will these self-tanners, which merely are chemicals and colored chemicals to boot, but will they help you with vitamin D? I don't think so. Will they?
No, they will not.
Okay. Let's go to Ontario, Canada. We've got Barry on the international line. Go ahead, Barry.
Hi, Mike and Eric. How you doing?
Good.
First thing, I work steady midnights. Have been doing that for 5 years now. I'm at work right now, actually. I've been taking some vitamin D, but based on what you're saying, I'm curious, first of all, how many units of vitamin D? 1, 2, 3,000. What would you recommend? Again, is the D2 or D3 any preference? And what about melatonin to help sleep during the day?
Sure. So vitamin D2 and vitamin D3 are equally effective, in my opinion. And I would recommend, if you're not exposed to any sunlight at all, that 2 to 3,000 units of vitamin D a day is perfectly safe and is exactly what your body needs. In terms of melatonin, you're right that some people find that if they take small doses of melatonin, that it helps them go to sleep. And like I said, that is not unexpected, because your melatonin levels go up at night normally that help you go to sleep.
All right, very good. We've got just about a minute or so to go. Barry, if people want more information, thank you, Barry, for that call. People want more information, Michael, on vitamin D, what you do. You've got a book out called The UV Advantage. What do they do?
Sure. Well, I have a new book coming out April 1st next year called The Vitamin D Solution.
Why'd you pick that date?
Pardon?
Why'd you pick that date, April Fool's Day?
Yeah, good. Well, we thought that it was very appropriate for a variety of reasons.
Maybe so.
And so that will be coming out April 1st, and it has a lot of new information about vitamin D. But like I said, you can go to my website, vitamindhealth.org. There's several publications that I have, as well as an hour presentation by me. A lot of people ask me lots of questions, so I've answered them. So there's over 200 questions and answers. So they can get a lot of information from that website.
Great. Michael, thank you so much for the information.
It was my pleasure, George.
Well worth it. Fantastic. There you go. You got to take some supplements every once in a while. Stay healthy. That's the name of the game. That's why we did this program. We get right back into some of our very strange, mysterious, and paranormal shows for the rest of the week. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Dell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.